This is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb. You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. And now, here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by at his home in Maryland is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb, political action director of the National Committee for a Sane Nuclear Policy, popularly known as SANE. Now, SANE is a committee of citizens organized for the purpose of worldwide control of disarmament and the United Nations. Based in Washington, Mr. Gottlieb works closely with officers of the executive branch, members of Congress, and representatives of other national organizations. In the summer of 1964, Mr. Gottlieb led 69 members of SANE on a 3-week tour of the Soviet Union. And in 1965, he served as an advisor to an interdenominational group of clergymen who visited South Vietnam. On his way to and from Vietnam, he met in Paris and Algiers with officials of both the Viet Cong and North Vietnam. Mr. Gottlieb holds his doctorate's degree from the University of Paris and has written articles for such magazines as Saturday Review, The Reporter, and Nation. And as you will recall, his organization recently held a protest march in Washington. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Gottlieb a question on tonight's topic, Vietnam, or express your opinion, give us a call here at Night Call. Our national Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Now, please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. 6601. Our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Our guest tonight, Mr. Sanford Gottlieb of SANE. Mr. Gottlieb, why are we in Vietnam?
Well, Russ, I think it originally dates back to the time when the United States was undertaking to finance the French war against most of the Vietnamese people during the 1950s. At that time, the United States, beginning with John Foster Dulles as Secretary of State, had the notion that this was part of a policy of encircling China, communist China, with a ring of pro-American regimes that were part of military alliances of the United States, and that this was the way to contain Chinese expansion. I think there were several things wrong with this assessment of how to do it, but that basically is why the United States has become, over the years, more and more involved in the present shooting war in Vietnam.
Has the present administration then inherited a baseball game that they maybe shouldn't be playing?
Well, certainly they have inherited a very bad situation, but I think in all fairness to the predecessors of Mr. Johnson, Mr. Johnson has presided over a situation which is far worse than the one he found when he came to power. And those of your listeners who may have watched the CBS TV show earlier tonight, in which Vietnam was discussed by the CBS correspondents, the point was made that we have walked kind of backwards into the very kind of situation that everybody said we should not be in, namely the United States taking over the war from the South Vietnamese. Up until recently, everybody has been saying this is a war to be fought by the South Vietnamese. The United States, just as recently as the beginning of this year, was in Vietnam primarily in the role of an advisor with about 23,000 military advisors at the time the bombings began in February of North Vietnam, and now there are close to 200,000 American troops who are increasingly taking over the brunt of the fighting. So the war has changed considerably just since Mr. Johnson has become president.
It seems to me that President Eisenhower at one time warned America about becoming involved in a land war on the Asia continent. Now, what do you think about that?
Well, not only Mr. Eisenhower, the situation is much more difficult, where it is still basically a guerrilla war rather than a conventional land war. The people on the other side don't employ the niceties of marching in formation and wearing uniform. They have political goals and are fighting basically a political war, and it's one from which I think no one can really emerge victorious.
We're talking with Mr. Sanford Gottlieb. He's political action director of SANE. This is the organization that recently held the protest march in Washington against our actions in Vietnam. Mr. Gottlieb, do you feel that the American citizen is being given the full story on Vietnam?
No, it's quite clear that we are not getting the full story. We haven't gotten it from the beginning. As Morley Safer of CBS was saying earlier tonight, that by the time a report comes out of Vietnam, goes back to Washington, and then goes through channels and is reported back in Saigon, that such a report is unrecognizable to the people who saw the event happen. The news is carefully controlled by officials both in Saigon and in Washington.
All right. Now, why this distrust of the American public?
Well, I think basically it's because the situation is exceedingly difficult. People have made mistakes. They're not particularly eager to advertise those mistakes. And to be fully candid with the American public would reveal some of the mistakes. I think just one example of what we're talking about here was more or less forced out of the administration by Eric Severide in his article in Look about the last days of Adlai Stevenson, in which it was revealed that two times at the end of 1964, the North Vietnamese government in Hanoi approached the United States through U Thant, Secretary General of the United Nations, once before the presidential elections and once after the elections, in an effort to meet in Rangoon, Burma, and both times Hanoi was rebuffed by the United States. Now, our government does have an explanation for this, but unfortunately, in my mind, it's not an explanation that holds water, but in any case, it was one that only came to light when it was published by a distinguished newsman.
Well, what is the government's reasoning behind not wanting to negotiate?
Basically, the reasoning is, they don't quite put it in these words, but this administration was not prepared to accept the kind of political settlement which it would have had to take in 1964.
We were losing.
We were losing, and the situation on the ground in South Vietnam was quite bad. And politically, the United States was not prepared for the political consequences, namely a coalition government in South Vietnam, which would include communists. So we decided to fight on, basically, to prevent the inclusion of communists in the government in the South.
Now, during your trip in, was it 65, you had a chance to talk with some of the leaders of the Viet Cong, or representatives, and North Vietnam. Now, how did these people appear to you at that time?
Well, I think they were saying basically then what they seem to be saying now, although I think the line has somewhat stiffened with additional months of bombing of North Vietnam and a greater commitment of men on both sides. What they're saying basically is this. Their country was divided in 1954 by the Geneva Accords.
Now, who were involved in this Geneva Accords?
Let's get this straight. This was the treaty which ended the war against the French.
Who signed the accord?
The basic agreement was between the French and what was known as the Viet Minh. The Viet Minh was a coalition of communists and non-communists led by Ho Chi Minh, the man who now holds power in North Vietnam. In some of the broader aspects, the agreement was also signed by Great Britain and the Soviet Union, the neighbors of North and South Vietnam, Laos and Cambodia, China,
supervise these free elections?
This was to be supervised by three countries, India, Poland, and Canada, which constituted an international control commission.
All right, why weren't the elections held?
Well, the elections were not held basically because everybody expected that Ho Chi Minh would win them. President Eisenhower said this in his memoirs. Everybody who can be considered an independent observer has agreed. Therefore, the government, which was set up in the South under Diem with American help, refused to go ahead and conduct these elections.
Actually, you're saying the government that we supported then broke its promise. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it did not actually make the promise. It really didn't commit itself to the treaty. Yet all the other parties to the agreement had committed themselves. So I think what we can say in fairness is the government which we helped bring to power in the South, the government which never really had a popular base in South Vietnam, refused to go ahead with implementing this treaty, knowing in advance how it was going to come out. And therefore, I think, in my view and in the view of many people, helped precipitate the war which we are now engaged in today. And that was one route of it. In other words, by not going ahead with an agreement to reunify the country peacefully, Diem, the government in the South, gave an incentive to the people in the North to reunify the country by force. Now, there was one thing that brought the situation to a head, and that was the kind of government that Diem ran. He, by 1956, was running a very tyrannical dictatorship, abolishing the only form of democracy which existed in South Vietnam, namely the election of village chiefs, setting up concentration camps for the political opposition, and then ruthlessly smashing the political opposition to the point where many of the groups, some non-communist, some communist, took up arms by 1957-58 and fought back. And this was really the beginning of the revolt in South Vietnam. It was really at the beginning a civil war against the Saigon government, a war in self-defense on the part of some of the people in South Vietnam who didn't like the way things were happening there. And only later did North Vietnam quite openly and materially begin to help them.
We're talking tonight with Mr. Sanford Gottlieb, and he's political action director of SANE. And of course, SANE is a political action, a committee for SANE nuclear policy. Our topic tonight is Vietnam. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay.
I'll bet you don't know where the comma comes.
The what?
The comma. I'll bet you don't know where the comma is supposed to be in the first line of that song you're singing.
Oh, who cares about commas?
Well, you should, if you know what you're singing.
Well, I can't see that it matters here. God rest you, merry gentlemen. Well, I suppose it comes after gentlemen.
Wrong. It comes after merry. God rest you, merry gentlemen.
Funny way of saying things, don't you think?
It's an old English expression, I suppose.
Well, the important thing is that it wishes people a Merry Christmas.
I don't find all that much in life to be merry about.
Well, of course, that's exactly the point. That's what Christmas is all about. If everything had been all right with life, God wouldn't have had to do anything. But it wasn't, and it isn't. And that's why God came to help us and stand beside us through it all. And that's why I was singing about being merry.
Okay, I shouldn't have said a thing. I think I'd rather hear you sing than talk.
Oh, thank you. God rest you merry, gentlemen, let nothing you do.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb, political action director of SANE, and we're talking about Vietnam and some of the history of Vietnam. And Mr. Gottlieb had a chance to talk with some Viet Cong representatives back in 19... 65, I think, in Paris, and also Algiers. Now, if you'd like to ask Mr. Gottlieb a question on Vietnam or make a comment or an observation, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us. All you have to do is dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct. And if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Our lines are open, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Sanford, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Richard Henry. Good evening, Richard. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Good evening, Mr. Gottlieb.
Yes, sir.
Minister of the First Unitarian Church here in Denver.
Glad to hear you.
And gratified that Dana Greeley, as president of our denomination, was with you in your mission to Vietnam this summer.
Yes, it was a pleasure to be with him.
He's a great fellow.
Sure is.
I guess I'm one of those, 43% of the nation who, according to the earlier CBS program, indicate that they feel LBJ has made inadequate attempts at getting the war to the conference table. And I was rather disturbed, I guess, as many Americans were, by Secretary Rusk's statement at the NATO conference today concerning under no circumstances would we think of getting out of Vietnam. But what I'm wondering is if, as I believe, the American public owes it to the President and to the Congress to assist in what we have stated are our aims, namely to get the war to the conference table, what your opinion would be of what seems to me the most, at least one step that might be taken that has not been taken, namely that the President instruct Ambassador Goldberg at the United Nations to make a statement offering to abide by a ceasefire and phased withdrawal of troops on both sides, provided our antagonists there would do the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would certainly welcome such a move. I think, however, that there is one prior problem, and that is this. The North Vietnamese and the Viet Cong simply don't believe the peaceful professions of the United States, I think in much the same way as our government does not believe them when they say they are for peace.
Yeah.
Both sides tend to react in the same way. They look at the military action, and they conclude from the military action that the other guy is not interested in talking peace. For example, a conversation with them will go this way. They will say, how can President Johnson be serious about talking peace when he is bombing North Vietnam every day? And I, as a good Westerner, can say, well, you understand that in the absence of a negotiated settlement, the military momentum, the military logic will carry the day, and then the same refrain will continue. Yes, but how can the President be serious about talking peace if he's introducing more land forces into South Vietnam every day, and so on? So my conviction is, and it's one that has been shared for many months by quite a few people, including Senator Fulbright and Senator Aiken and Senator McGovern, many others, including other governments, particularly those that have been in touch with Hanoi, that the United States really is going to have to take some steps of military de-escalation in order to be convincing. And that's why it was important, and I think it may unfortunately be a little late now, it was important to try to get a pause in the bombings of North Vietnam for a sufficiently long time so this deed, this act, could sink in. The other guys also have a debate going on. They're being pushed by the Chinese, who are in the convenient position of cheering them on madly from the sidelines, who don't seem to want to have the war end right away. And there certainly are moderates in the Soviet Union and in Hanoi who perhaps would like to see it end. We need some acts of military de-escalation to get the point across that the United States really does want to negotiate. president himself, let's say on Christmas Eve, to take to radio and TV and say to the American public, and this of course means to the whole world, that the United States is willing to abide by the principles of the Geneva Conference, the ultimate withdrawal of all foreign troops, a Vietnam in which there will be neither foreign troops nor foreign military bases, there will be no military alliances in which the two halves can peacefully reunify as determined by their own people, and then announce a prolonged pause in the bombings of North Vietnam at least. And I think at this late stage of the game, we'd probably have to go a little beyond that and say, for a given period of time, we are going to hold up on further troop reinforcements for South Vietnam. We already have 200,000 there, so that the risk of doing this would not be too great. And then just sit back and wait and encourage the other side to do the same. As I say, I think it's kind of late for this. I would not be too hopeful, even if it were done, because I think it should have been done a long time ago, but I think this represents the last hope for bringing the war to the conference table, perhaps for another year or more.
Mr. Henry?
Yes, sir.
We have other callers standing by,
right.
So I want to thank you for your comment and
thank
your question,
you.
Sir. Good night. Mr. Richard Henry, a gentleman from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN, and another listener from KTLN now, also in Denver, Colorado, Mr. David Adams. Good evening, David. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Mr. Goslin.
Yes, sir.
Your peace movement might have been a good thing, but I think you made a march on the wrong city. You should have made a march on Hanoi.
Well, let me tell you, Mr. Adams, what we did there.
March, not Washington. We are not the aggressors. Hanoi and the North is the aggressors, and there can be no compromise. There can be no conference. The only thing is if the VC and the Communist North, if they all pull back behind the 17th parallel and leave the South Vietnamese in peace and let them live their life the way they choose, there wouldn't be any trouble. And why is all the burden on the United States? Why
does the United States have to make two comments
sit down at a conference table? And why should the president have to get on TV and bicker like this fellow just said to me? He sounded like a leftist.
Well, let me make...
Okay, David, let Sanford have his say now, okay?
Right. I'd like to answer that with 2 points. The first point is that we do talk to the other side, and where this march was concerned, most of the sponsors of that march signed a telegram to Ho Chi Minh as well as to the Liberation Front, in which we indicated that we are not just addressing ourselves to our own government, we're speaking to all parties to the conflict, and we're asking them all to do the same thing.
It would be more powerful, though, if you went over there in March.
Well,
I
think you'd have to address yourself to Mr. Rusk. There seem to be some travel restrictions on going to North Vietnam on our side.
Oh, I see.
So they don't let us go there. But we can communicate via Western Union, and Mr. Gibb has pointed out there have been some personal contacts with them, and among the things we tell them, for example, in these personal contacts, is that they must not overestimate the impact that the peace movement is having in the United States, which is...
What does your magazine SANE mean? What is it, initials, or S-A-N-E? What does that stand for?
SANE is really kind of shorthand for the longer name of the organization, which is National Committee for a SANE Nuclear Policy. We started as a citizens group working for a nuclear test ban. But let me come back to my second point, which is the reason I think the United States has to take some first steps. See, there's a difference between our intentions and the consequences of our acts. For example, we may have the best intentions of the world, but when it gets translated into military action on the ground in South Vietnam, for example, it may not be too well understood by the people who are the unfortunate victims of, let's say, a napalm bombing of a village because the flyers have information that some Viet Cong snipers are in that village. In other words, if your house is getting burned in the process and some of your children killed, you're not too happy with the people who are doing the job, regardless of what their good intentions are. And we are in the position in Vietnam, in the unfortunate position of being the outsiders. There's no doubt in my mind that North Vietnam is helping the insurrection in the South, and as of 1965, for the first time, introducing their own regular troops. But the point to the Vietnamese, I think, is that they too are Vietnamese, and the foreign troops in Vietnam are Americans. Now, if Hanoi really directs this rebellion, which I think it does,
Hanoi doesn't want peace, and you and your groups, peace marchers, you're doing the same thing that the French did. What caused the French to pull out is you're causing this tension. You're arousing the motherhood, the mother instinct of American women whose sons and brothers and so forth are over there fighting sweethearts. Women sweethearts are fighting, and they're you're trying to get pressure. You're putting pressure on them to try to get the American policies fixed so that the Americans will come back here like that. The French women, did the same thing. They said, why are men being killed for no reason? And
well, I think that's probably,
cut on, and
if that was the question they asked, I think that was probably a perfectly good question.
Way of doing things.
David?
Yes?
Is there anything wrong with being for peace?
No, I believe in peace. I think we should have peace. But I think that when this gentleman and anyone else tries to go around about it the wrong way, they're aiding and abetting the enemy. That is why Hanoi has not sat down at the negotiating tables yet. It's because they figure the detention here in America, they figure that the Americans are split, they're not united, that is aiding and abetting them.
Mr. Adams?
Until we settle down and back our men and back our policies to the hilt, well, then we won't have any peace there.
Can I get a word?
Sanford, yeah. Go right ahead.
It seems to me that if we want to know why the war has lasted as long as it is, we might direct the question to our own government to find out why, when Hanoi was willing to meet in Burma in 1964, the United States on two occasions refused to meet. That's what prolonged the war, plus the bombings of the North and the further military escalation. And it's not any amount of demonstrations in the United States, which may very well be misunderstood by the North Vietnamese, but they also understand and are great realists about what is happening in their own country. And it's makes a much greater impact on them that there are 200,000 Americans in South Vietnam than the fact that there might be 30,000 Americans around the world.
Well, gentlemen, I have to break this conversation now because we have a station break coming up. David?
Two of our men go because of this march to Washington.
Dave, we have to cut now. Thank you very, very much for calling Night Call. Good night. Mr. Dave Adams from Denver, Colorado, listening on KTLN. Our guest tonight is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb. He's Political Action Director of SANE. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Five gold rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree.
She's downright greedy.
Who is?
The girl in that song. 12 gifts, and what gifts?
Well, people like different things.
I'll say. Five golden rings, four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree. That I like. A partridge in a pear tree.
Oh, it's just a Christmas carol about gifts. Bit different, perhaps.
Well, certainly that, all right. Six swans are swimming, really.
And what about your gifts?
Well, I'm not giving anything like that. Besides, I think there's getting to be too much gift-giving.
Oh, I don't know. Christmas began as a gift.
You mean the baby in the manger? That's different.
No, it's not. We needed that gift to show he loves us and cares enough to share our life here. And our giving shows that we care.
With a partridge in a pear tree.
Oh, for goodness sake, that's just a song. but it does have the right idea about Christmas being a time for giving.
I suppose now you're going to sing all the rest of the 12 verses.
Yes, I am. On the sixth day of Christmas, my dear.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, gentle people, and our guest tonight is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb. He's political action director of SANE, better known as the National Committee for a SANE Nuclear Policy. But tonight, Mr. Gottlieb is addressing himself to Vietnam. And you'll recall Mr. Gottlieb was the gentleman who organized the recent peace march on Washington. If you'd like to join in and express your opinion on Vietnam or whether or not the peace march is helping the enemy or actually helping Americans to understand the Vietnam problem better, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, it's very easy to call us, and we invite you to do so. Pick up the telephone and dial area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may call us here at Night Call from anywhere. Collect. You may reverse the charges. Please, when you're calling, ask the operator to make the call station to station. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. 846-6601. Mr. Gottlieb, I have a caller standing by in Baltimore, Maryland, a listener on WBAL, Mr. W.J. Winchester. Good evening, Mr. Winchester.
Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Mr. Gottlieb?
Yes, sir.
Would you answer this question for me, please? Was at any time the United States invited to intervene in the Vietnamese situation?
There is supposed to be, Mr. Winchester, an invitation from the government of Diem to the previous government of Mr. Eisenhower to assist economically and militarily.
Supposed to be.
I've never seen it.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming that there is.
Uh-huh.
And that aid, as Mr. Eisenhower has recently said, was supposed to be conditioned upon needed reforms in South Vietnam.
All right, may I refer to your earlier statement, and I would like to ask you to clarify it as to which government you're referring to.
This was the government.
I'm quoting you as near as I could. There was a government in the Vietnam, or the Viet, whatever.
South Vietnam. Vietnam.
Quoting you, smashing the only form of democratic government. Now, did you infer that was a North Vietnamese government or a South Vietnamese?
No, the North Vietnamese government never had any forms of democracy to smash. They,
Now, wait a minute. Now, you made the statement that the only form of government, democratic government...
In South Vietnam, was at the village level...
Pardon?
Was at the village level with the election of village chiefs.
Right. Now, who was smashing that government?
Diem, the man that the United States supported in power in South Vietnam.
That's what you say.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I invite you not to take my word for it, but to consult some of the specialists on the area, like P.J. Honey, who's a scholar from Great Britain the State Department likes to quote selectively, Bernard Fall, the author of The Two Vietnams, Brian Crozier, the author of Southeast Asia in Turmoil.
Well, now, I will quote you again. There was supposed to be an invitation.
I've never seen it, but I'm assuming...
an invitation was issued. How do you set yourself up to speak?
I'm sorry?
You said there was supposed to be an invitation.
Yes. I say in all the discussion, I have yet to see the piece of paper...
You and I don't know each other, but you are double-talking like a communist.
Well, that's your observation, sir. I'm trying to answer your question.
That's my opinion.
All right. You're entitled to your opinion. What is your question?
I've already asked several questions, and all you give me an answer is double talk. I said, was the United States ever invited in? You said there was supposed to be an invitation.
Let me put it this way. We put him in power.
You put it beautifully. But give me a straight out answer.
Okay.
Was there an invitation?
If you will let me speak, I'll give you the complete sequence. The United States helped put Diem in power. Diem invited the United States to help economically and militarily. as Mr. Eisenhower, who was then president at the time, economically and, yes, to help him economically and militarily, dependent upon needed reforms in South Vietnam, which never took place, and at no point was it supposed to be the sending of American troops.
But nevertheless, I'll take your own words, we were invited militarily to assist.
By a puppet government.
By a government that was eventually overthrown by the South Vietnamese, and General Ky, the present premier, led one of the first attacks with his Air Force on the Palace of Diem. Is that correct?
That's right.
Mr. Winchester?
Yes.
Is that correct, as far as you know?
I am probably in the same place as billions of people in America. We don't know all these details.
Well, I invite you not to take my word for it.
May be clarified very simply. I'm taking you, Mr. Gottlieb. You set yourself up as an authority.
No, I'm not setting myself up as an authority.
We were invited militarily to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that that government was overthrown.
Right, but you're not.
We were invited.
You're forgetting part of what I'm saying, I think, very conveniently. I am saying that there was a request for economic and military assistance to the government of South Vietnam.
All right.
Which means, incidentally, happened to be in violation of the Geneva Agreements. There were not supposed to be any military alliances. But that's another point which you're not raising.
Well, gentlemen.
A signer to the Geneva Agreement?
What's that?
You heard me.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Was the government that invited us to come in for economic and military assistance a signer to the agreement?
No, it was not.
Mr. Winchester, I want to thank you for calling Night Call and expressing your opinion, sir.
Okay.
Good night. Okay. A gentleman from Baltimore, Maryland, listening on WBAL, Mr. W.J. Winchester, who feels that it's difficult to get information. And obviously the gentleman is trying to get information so that he can evaluate the situation. I think basically, Sanford, this is what you were saying earlier, that many Americans seem very confused on the issues, and that we don't seem to have enough information to make value judgments.
It's a real full-time job of homework to get information on this war, and I would like to repeat now to the people who have already called in, those who are going to call in, and those who won't have a chance, that I don't want anybody to take my word for anything. I would prefer that they do their own homework. I would like to recommend a couple of good books and good articles, which I think...
Well, go right ahead, Sanford.
One of them, I think probably the outstanding work in the field, is Bernard Fall's The Two Vietnams. It's a tremendous work on the recent history of Vietnam. Another shorter paperback is Brian Crozier's Southeast Asia in Turmoil. There's a superb book by Malcolm Brown, the Associated Press man in Saigon, called The New Face of War, and particularly some of the chapters on how the Viet Cong works. The latest issue of Saturday Review, the magazine, December 18, contains a debate between myself and Leo Chern with...
By the way, Mr. Chern's going to be on next week.
Oh, is he?
Call. Yes.
Well, you'll have at least two sides of the problem in that case. I would invite your listeners to read then the both sides as summarized in the December 8th issue of Saturday Review.
Sanford, are you familiar with the book put out by a fellow named, I think, Scheer?
Yes, I am.
How we became involved in
That's
Vietnam.
Right.
I found that many people were reading this in our Night Call audience. Well, we have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado now, a listener on KTLN, Mrs. Evelyn Lamar. Good evening, Mrs. Lamar, and welcome to Night Call, ma'am.
Good evening. This man's approach to this problem is so biased and slanted, and it has made me so angry, but I hope I can contain myself long enough to bring up a few points which to tell him a few things about a few of the points that he mentioned that are so terribly wrong.
Okay, Evelyn, please do.
Yes, well, in the first place, we didn't put President Diem into power, but I'm not going to go into that because there isn't time. But he says that President Jim was a murderer, and he laid every label on him that he possibly could to downgrade him before the American people, and that just isn't so. The truth is that President Jim himself built thousands of schoolhouses, and he fixed agricultural credit for land reform, thousands of new schools, and thousands of village health stations, rail transportation, and a lot of other things too numerous to mention tonight. And every one of these were sabotaged by the North Vietnamese that stayed there after the Geneva Conference for that exact purpose, to downgrade and to get rid of anybody that took power after the South Vietnamese tried to go it alone. In spite of all of these horrors that they brought on to the Vietnamese people, the per capita income rose by 20% in South Vietnam, and that is the reason why the North Vietnam wanted to take over South Vietnam. They did it because they wanted their money, and they were going to make sure that they got it all themselves.
Okay, Evelyn, let Sanford reply to those two comments right now, okay?
Yes.
Sanford, please.
Okay, now, I think the timing, the years on the sequence of events are very important here. What I said was Diem came to power in 54. In 56, there were supposed to be reunification elections. By 1955, it was clear he had refused to hold reunification elections. May I continue? In 1956, he abolished the elected village councils that constituted the only form of democratic rule in South Vietnam, and thereby imposed on the villagers, who make up 85% of the South Vietnamese population, the dictatorship which he exercised from Saigon. Don't take my word from it. I will give you an exact quote from the British scholar P.J. Honey.
No, don't, because it's probably a communist that wrote it.
P.J. Honey,
Evelyn,
information can get it by writing to the United States government and asking for it, and they will get the facts there.
All right,
Evelyn.
The United States government has its facts, and I have an independent mind and search out my own.
Sure,
I would like to quote Mr. Honey. It was already clear, he said, that Diem was establishing an authoritarian regime by 1956, which would tolerate no political dissent.
Well, of course not. He didn't want the communists in there tearing up his country.
It so happens that the political dissent at that point was being exercised not just by communists, but by those religious sects known in Vietnam as the Hoa Hao and the Cao Dai, which still at that date had private armies, and Diem was out to smash those private armies, and this was one of the things that helped to provoke the revolt.
Well, Evelyn and Sanford, we have to break now for our station break, so Evelyn, I want to thank you for expressing your opinions on Night Call, ma'am.
Thank you, sir.
Good night.
Good night.
Miss Evelyn Lamar, a lady who has strong opinions, and a lady who believes that we are absolutely right
in Vietnam and that the Diem regime was an excellent regime as far as the Vietnamese people were concerned. Our guest tonight is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb, and he's political director of SANE. We're talking about Vietnam, and you're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Deck the halls with boughs of holly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season.
That's silly. Fa-la-la-la-la. Honestly, what does it mean?
Well, it's a happy sound.
Like ha-ha and hurrah?
Right. Tis the season to be jolly, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la.
You like Christmas, don't you?
Well, don't you?
Yes, but you go overboard.
And why not? I enjoy the fun, the music, the gifts, people, homecoming, love, the whole bit.
I wonder how it all got started.
God started it. You know that.
Oh, you mean Bethlehem, the manger, the star.
What else?
But that's religious. What's that got to do with fa-la-la-la-la?
Everything. Every time we celebrate Christmas, we remind ourselves that God is with us, sharing everything, no matter what. Now, that's a pretty happy thought.
Fa-la-la-la-la?
Yes, and do you mind if I finish my song now?
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Deck the halls with... with boughs of holly, fa la 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 la. 'Tis the season to be jolly.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb. Hello again, gentle people, and welcome to Night Call. We're talking about Vietnam tonight, and there seems to be much interest in the Vietnam situation, and a great deal of people who believe one way and others that believe another. I'm wondering how one does get to the truth. Who do you believe? This is a real difficult problem in today's world. Our guest tonight is Mr. Sanford Gottlieb, and he's Political Action Director of SANE. And you'll recall this is the organization that formed the march in Washington recently, the Peace March. If you'd like to join us here at Night Call, our lines are open, and we invite you to do so. It's very simple. Dial area code 313-846-6601. Let us know what you're thinking about. What do you think about Vietnam? What do you know about Vietnam? Sanford, we have a caller standing by in Pueblo, Colorado, a listener on KKAM, Mr. Charles DeLuca, Jr. Good evening, Charles. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Yes, sir.
Your comments, please.
All right, sir. I was wondering, since Mr. Gottlieb had said that Hanoi had made the overture for the peace talks, when the United States imposed the when they stopped bombing North Vietnam for a while, if Hanoi was so anxious for peace talks, why they didn't make any type of overtures at that time?
Well, there are two separate there are actually three. Two of them fall together in 1964, and they're the two that are described by Eric Severide in Look magazine. That was when Youthont of the United Nations was serving as an intermediary, and Hanoi had agreed to meet with the United States in Rangoon, Burma, both before and after the presidential elections of that year. On both occasions, the United States turned it down. That was before the bombings. Then, in February, if you recall, the bombings of the North began. In May, there was a short pause of 5 days. It recently came to light that during this pause of 5 days, there was some kind of what was considered a signal, not from Hanoi, but from their representative in Paris. So what he actually said to a representative of the French government was that if the United States were willing to accept as a basis for discussions the 4 points which the North Vietnamese had formulated, negotiations could begin, and this was passed on to Washington. Now, what happened next is a source, I think, of some contention. I have discussed this with three different officials in Washington, and from each one I get a slightly different version. I'm perfectly happy to share the versions with you if you're interested.
Please do.
All right, the first one said to me, this was not the kind of message we were looking for. Now, to my mind, that merely raises questions. It doesn't provide an answer. And the first question would be, what kind of a message were we looking for? The second one indicated that an unacceptable condition was being posed among these 4 points, and the one he was talking about is a coalition government in the South. Now, if the United States considers that unacceptable, I have another question, and that is, did the administration try to find out whether it was negotiable? And then the third one had a still different version, which was that this message was received in Washington from the French after the bombings had resumed, and at that point the administration went through a third government to Hanoi and try to get a higher official than the North Vietnamese man in Paris to repeat what was said without success. Now, again, I am left only with questions, and here my question is, if this sequence of events was so, why didn't we again stop the bombings, not try to evoke an answer within a 5-day period, why didn't we stop the bombings again and try to pursue this probe in less inflammatory conditions? So I really wondering and bewildered and with more questions than I have answers.
Charles, I want to thank you for calling Night Call. We have several other callers standing by. Good night, sir. Mr. Charles DeLuca, Jr., a gentleman from Pueblo, Colorado, listening on KKAM. And let's go out to Baltimore, Maryland, and a listener listening on WBAL. The gentleman is living, of course, in Bel Air, Maryland. And Mr. Henry Calvert Mann. Good evening, Mr. Mann. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Thank you.
Your comment, please.
Well, good evening, Roscoe. This is Newman.
Oh, I'm sorry. Newman.
That's right, right. Russ, I'm listening to Mr. Gottlieb, and I am bothered about one striking similarity which occurred in the beginning of World War II.
What was that,
Mr. Newman? I'm referring to Chamberlain and Hitler's meeting and the infamous Munich Agreement that came out of it. This, again, is a dictator that we're talking about. You do not rationalize or even reason with a dictator when he starts to move to accomplish his aims. And I feel that we have the same thing in Vietnam, in Red China, who is applauding them and encouraging them. And I don't understand Mrs. Gottlieb's position when he insists that the burden is on America, who is not the aggressor, to back off, to excuse ourselves, and hope that a dictator, that type of philosophy, will honor what all they, as I can see, all they want is time to accomplish their end.
Are you talking about Ho Chi Minh as the dictator?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me see if I can meet it. First, let me say that I don't think it suffices to say that we're dealing with a dictator and therefore we can or cannot do business with him, because we were obviously doing business with our own kind of dictator in the South. So it's not the dictatorship in itself which is the problem. But
what is the problem?
Well, here is what I would consider the problem. Let us imagine, let us project the situation at present, and we didn't get into this, in terms of what will happen to South Vietnam if there is no political settlement, which I think is the likely kind of situation now. South Vietnam has 14 million people. There were a few weeks ago 700,000 refugees. By January of next year, according to the Washington Post, there will be 1 million refugees in this nation of 14 million. By definition in South Vietnam, according to Leo Chern, there are two or three who have never made it to a camp for everyone who is in a camp. The definition of a refugee being somebody who's in a refugee camp. In other words, by January, in other words, next month, there will be 2 or 3 million real refugees in a nation of 14 million people.
Mr. Gottlieb, the refugees are fleeing from what?
They are fleeing from a variety of things.
No, but I mean, they're fleeing from the Viet Cong, aren't they?
Well, some of them are, yes.
I mean, no, not some, the majority.
No, I don't think you can say that.
You mean that people are leaving Saigon, going into Viet Cong territory?
They are leaving their villages and going to the coastal towns because their villages are being bombed and burned.
They are being bombed and burned, but they're still escaping or trying to escape from a position which is untenable. And who's caused this position? America. This country went in there after this situation started to protect what we have to protect, and which, whether we like to think of it or not, is our way of life, our philosophy. We're not the aggressor there.
Well, what I'm really trying to say is that there is a difference between the good intentions of America and how it looks to the people who happen to be caught on the receiving end.
Well, certainly, this is the unfortunate part of warfare. There's always innocents, but these are not caused by the innocents. These are caused by the dictators.
Well, I'm afraid I just don't see it quite that simple.
Henry, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
You're saying that we shouldn't do business with dictators, is that it?
I do not say we should not do business with dictators. If you refer to business as discussion, as a possible table of agreement, I think this has to be. You cannot go into blind reactions without some attempt to communicate.
I see.
But we do know that when we have a dictatorship of this type, a militant type of dictatorship, there is no reasoning here. They fight for time. They talk about cessation of bombing. This is a wonderful, humane thing. Agreed. However, what would the Viet Cong do if we do back off for a week or 2 weeks? They will do nothing but flow right back into the areas that our troops and the Vietnamese troops have tried to dislodge them from. What are we going to gain from this?
Well, I think what you're saying may very well prove to be the case if that's the course that the administration follows. On the other hand, I would say that I would be willing to run the risk, especially with 200,000 Americans in the South, as over against the risks of going on the way we are going on, because what we are doing is simply more of what has happened in the last 10 months. A greater American intervention is bringing in a greater North Vietnamese intervention, which in turn will bring in more Americans.
Mr. Galley, they're fighting for a plum to their own political end.
Well, they are fighting for what looks increasingly to them like a... And I'm trying to look at it through their perspective because we say we're trying to influence their behavior.
This is commendable, to look through it through their perspective, but you have to realize that the perspective that you refer to is not a democratic perspective.
That's right.
It is a government-insisted and a dogmatic approach to what a dictator feels is best for the country.
Well,
these people have nothing to say about it. They are caught in the web, I agree. But at the same time, the thing I do not understand is that you know if we get out of there or any other world power gets out of there and let the Viet Cong have their way, not only will Vietnam go, Laos will go.
Would you be willing to put it to a free election, sir?
Pardon?
You'd be willing to put it to a free election?
Am I willing to a free election?
Yeah.
This is an academic point because I feel this way. What were free elections in this country after the Civil War?
Well, see, the alternative to free election, in my view, is a South Vietnam which is so devastated that I'm not sure that the people who are left over at the end of 5 years or 10 years of warfare are going to be particularly thankful to Washington or anybody else.
Well, gentlemen, our time's up on Night Call. Mr. Newman, I want to thank you for calling and expressing your opinion, sir.
Well, I want to thank you, because I think it's a wonderful forum, and please keep up the good work.
Thank you, sir.
Right. That's a good commendation, Russ.
Thank you. Gentlemen listening on WBAL, and our guest tonight, of course, was Mr. Gottlieb, Sanford Gottlieb from Sane. And Sanford, I want to thank you for being our guest. It's been a real pleasure having you here on Night Call.
Well, it was lots of fun.
Tomorrow night on
Night Call, our guest will be dentist Dr. Edwin Maxwell, and he's a dentist in Washington, D.C., and we'll be talking about dental care. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.